and the variational RDF method.
Okay, thank you. So this talk is going to be based on joint work with Antonio Assin and Artur Garcia, which are both present here, and also Miguel Navasquez. So this morning we heard the talk of Robert Erdahl and Paul Ayers, and we heard about this two-particle reduced density matrix method. So we've seen that n representability condition on the two-particle reduced density matrix induce positivity constraints on some set of matrices, and this allows to use semi-definite programming to compute or to approximate electronic energy of atoms and molecules. So in this talk, what I'm going to do is to show that this RDM method can actually be viewed as a special case of a more general and abstract approach, which can be used to solve other problems in quantum theory and in quantum information. And this more general approach, it's not directly motivated by the N representability problem, although it is very related. So historically, our original motivation was to compute the quantum violation of Bell inequalities. And this led us to introduce a method to solve a large class of optimization problems, which we call non-commutative polynomial optimization problems. And it turns out that computing the energy of a system of n electrons is an instance of these general non-commutative polynomial optimization problems. And then we realized that when we apply our method to this electronic energy problem, well, we actually recover a method which was already known, which is the RDM method. So the content of this talk will be the following. I'm going to review the RDM method based on semi-definite programming. As we already heard about this morning, I'm going to be quite fast. Then I'm going to introduce these non-commutative polynomial optimization problems, and I'm going to explain what is the method that we have to solve them. And then we'll see that it will be quite obvious that this reduces to the RDM method in the case of the computation of the electronic energy. And then I also briefly mention other applications of these optimization problems. Okay, so let's start with the RDM method. So so I remember this is a variational approach. So we introduce a finite set of R basis functions. So these are the orbitals that the electrons can occupy. And we expand the n electron wave function in the subspace spanned by this finite set of functions. And the corresponding Hamiltonian is the following, where AI is the annihilation operator associated to the orbital I, and AI dagger is the creation operator. So this is the kinetic energy of the electrons and the part of the Hamiltonian which describe the nuclei electron interactions, and this is the interaction between two electrons. And because electrons just interact pairwise, there is no high order term in the Hamiltonian. So when we want to compute the energy, we have to take the expectation value of the Hamiltonian, and so you see that the energy can be determined solely from the one particle density matrix and the two particle density matrices which are defined here. And actually, the one particle density matrix is also completely determined from two particle density matrix. So to know the energy, we just need to know the two particle density matrix. And so this suggests that to find the growth state energy of an electronic system, it is sufficient to minimize the Hamiltonian with respect to two particle density matrices. But when we do that, what you obtain is an energy which is far lower than the exact one, and this is due to the fact that not every two-particle density matrix originates from an n-particle wave function. So we need to impose additional n-representability condition on the two-particle density matrix. And an example of some necessary n-representability conditions are the following. So here I have the one particle reduced density matrix. Here I have the one whole RDM, the two particle RDM, the two whole RDM, and then the one particle one whole RDM if you want. And if there exists n particle wave function, all these matrices have to be positive semi-definite. And in addition, there are some linear relation between all these matrices. They can all be expressed in terms of the two-particle RDM. For example, the matrix Q here can be written like that as a function of the two RDM. So because all these constraints are just positivity constraints and linear constraints, I can use them and I can add them to the problem of the minimization of the energy. And so this defines a semi-definite program, and this can be solved exactly. And because we have not implemented all possible n representability conditions, solving this problem will in general give a lower bound to the ground state energy. and of course, we can derive a whole hierarchy of such SDP constraints. For instance, if I consider the three particle RDMs, they also all have to be positive. And if I add this constraint to my SDP, this will increase the accuracy of the computations. And so why all these matrices have to be positive? So this is very simple to see, because all these matrices can be written in this way. So they can be written as the scalar product of two vectors, where my vectors are just obtained by acting on the n-particle wave function with a product of the annihilation creation operators. For instance, G2 can be written like that, right? And now it's of course well known that when you have a matrix which is defined, whose entries are defined as a scalar product of vector, it has to be positive semi-definite. So now what you are going to see is that this very simple trick allows us to solve a much more general class of problems. So what are these problems? So they are defined in terms of n variables, x1 to xn, which we view as operators acting on some Hilbert space which is not specified, okay? And we are going to define polynomial function of these variables, so p, q, and r. For instance, p of x can be this. And these polynomials, of course, are also viewed as operators which act on Hilbert space H. And then the problem that we want to solve is the following. So we want to find the minimal average value of the operator polynomial P subject to the constraint that the operator Q of X is equal to 0, and then when I act with the operator R of X on the vector psi, I obtain 0. And here you should, I mean, what I want to do really is to find the minimal representation of my operator X such that this is minimum. Okay, so I do not fix in advance the Hilbert space, I do not fix the dimension. I'm looking over all possible Hilbert space. I want to find the representation which yields the minimum to this optimization problem. Okay, so why do I call that non-commutative polynomial optimization? Because if I add the commutativity constraints to the problem, so these are polynomial constraints, right? So I can add them in the definition of my problem. And if I do that, it turns out that the scalar representation where every operator is just a number is actually always an optimal solution. So then this problem reduces to a standard polynomial optimization problem defined over Rn. So we really need this non-commutativity property for our problem to be different than a standard polynomial optimization problem. So what we have done is that in this archive paper, we have introduced a sequence of relaxations of the original problems, which provide lower bound to the optimal solutions. And each of these relaxations is a semi-definite program, so it can be solved exactly. And this sequence of relaxations is organized in a hierarchy, and when you consider higher order relaxations, you get better lower bounds. It's more costly also to compute, obviously. And in the asymptotic limit, the lower bounds, they converge to the global solution of the original problem. Okay, so how does that work? So first, let me introduce some notation. So given my n operator x1 to xn, I'm going to define a monomial of degree k as a product of k operators. Okay. Then the identity operator, I am going to view it as a monomial, which I'll denote like that. And of course, the product of two monomials is itself a monomial, which I denote in this way. Okay, and a polynomial is nothing but a linear combination of a monomial, right? So now that I have given this notation, I can build my relaxation of degree t. So the starting point is to consider the set of all vectors of this form, where x alpha here is a monomial of degree at most k. Okay, so I have the vector psi, I have the vector which is obtained by acting with xi and psi, the vector which are obtained by acting with product of two operator on psi, and so on, up to the vector which are obtained by acting with k product of operator on psi. So this is a finite set of vectors. And then I define a matrix, a finite matrix, whose row and columns are indexed by all these vectors, and whose entry alpha beta are just the scalar product of these vectors. So of course, this matrix has to be also positive semi-definite, right? As before. And now the objective function of my original problem, I can write it like that. So, I mean, here I can put the identity, and if you remember my notation, the identity, I can write it like that. And so you see that this is correspond to one of the entries of my matrix. So the objective function is a linear function of the entry of the matrix, right? Now the constraint, I had this constraint on my problem, if you remember, they also induce linear constraint on M, okay? For instance, if I take my polynomial Q of X, I can take this average value with, or not the average value, but the matrix element, if you want, with a vector X beta psi on the right and X alpha psi on the left, and this is also to be zero, okay? And as I said before, the product of two monomials is itself a monomial. So I can rewrite this like that. And this is just, again, one of the entries of my matrix. So you see that in the end, I have here some linear relation on my matrix. And in the same way, this condition here can be written like that. So now if I multiply by x alpha psi on the left, this is again one of the entries of my matrix. So I again have some linear constraint for my matrix. Okay, so now, What I have starting from my original problem, I derived the existence of a matrix which must be positive, which must satisfy some linear constraints, which comes from the operator constraints that define my problem, and I've seen that the objective function is a linear function of M. So putting all together, I'm going to define the relaxation Rk of the degree t of my original problem as the following SDP. Okay, and if I solve this problem, I will obtain a solution which will be a lower bound to the original problem. Because of course, if there exist operators and a vector satisfy all my constraints, there exists a matrix with these properties. But the converse in general is not true. There can be matrices which satisfy all these constraints and which I cannot write as the overlapped matrix which cannot be generated from overhead matrix built on this vector which I defined before, right?
And what was called K here? K is the
vector. Okay, so K here, so you see K is the size of the matrix, and the matrix is defined by taking a set of vectors which are built in this way, where X alpha here is at most of the degree K, okay? So, for instance, if I go to degree 2, I would just have this kind of vector. So I have a matrix of a certain size. And if I increase k, I will consider a bigger set of vectors, and so I will have a bigger matrix. So this indexes the labels and the row of my matrix. Okay? Okay, so obviously, so if pk denotes the solution of the relaxation of order k, and p star is the solution of the original problem, I have this property, right? So any solution is a lower bound on the solution of the global problem. And because the relaxation of order k plus 1 contains the relaxation of order k, I have a monotone sequence of increasing lower bounds.
But polynomials, you're going to, sorry, PQ and R are given to you?
Yes.
They are polynomials bound degree.
Yes.
And nevertheless, in the solution process, you're going to be introducing these X sub alpha arbitrary guarantee.
Okay, no, 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 okay. So you're right. So okay, so the polynomial P, Q, and R are of bounded degree, right?
Yeah.
Some bounded degree. So this is the data which is given to define the problem. Then, of course, the first meaningful relaxation step should be a relaxation step where I can define at least the objective function. So I must start with some k sufficiently big, right? And then here, this condition, I'm only going to impose this condition on the value of my matrix, right? So it's not for any alpha and beta, just for the alpha and beta that enter in the definition of the matrix. So this is a finite set of constraints. But the set of constraints increase when I increase the dimension of the matrix, right? I had more and more constraints because I have more and more variables also. Okay. So what about the convergence of this relaxation? So here are a few results. So in general, so you have to remember that here I didn't put any constraint on the optimization problem, so the Hilbert space can be infinite, right? So so in general, we do not expect to have a finite convergence. But what we can show is that if the constraints Q of X, which define the problem, are such that any operator which satisfies them has to be bounded, then the sequence of Laurent bounds converge in the asymptotic limit to the global optimum. Okay. So in principle, I should go to very high order k relaxation to have to find the true global optimum. But in practice, what we observe is that very often it's at the third or fourth relaxation step, we already hit the optimal solution. So this is very similar to what Paul Ayers said this morning, that in practice you find that, Robert Erdahl also, in practice you find that after a few relaxation steps, you hit, but at least you have a lower bound which is quite close to the optimal one. So in some cases, as I said, we can even have a finite set of iteration, we can hit the global optimum, and we have a criterion to detect when this is the case. So if we take our matrix M, which is the solution to the SDP, and if we compute the rank of this matrix, and if the rank of this matrix is equal to the submatrix of key M, which corresponds to the previous relaxation step, so if the two ranks are equal, then we know for sure that we have obtained the optimal solution. Moreover, we know that the optimal psi and x which realize this this optimal solution live in an inner space which is of finite dimension, which is just given by the rank of the matrix. And in this case, we also have a procedure to reconstruct the optimal vector and operators. Yes?
Is there some kind of converse statement that if the optimal psi and x can be represented in a small Hilbert space with low dimensions, then mm-hmm.
No. Okay. no, actually, we have examples where we know that the dimension is finite dimensional. The optimal solution is finite dimensional, but we will never, this rank condition will never be satisfied. Okay. So this is, if you observe this, you know that you have hit the optimum, but in some case, you may attain the optimum without this condition being satisfied. Yes? This one?
Yes,
in some sense, yeah.
So you always find some minimum
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so actually this method is related to other mathematical techniques. So as I said earlier, if I add explicitly the commutativity constraints, then this problem becomes equivalent to a standard polynomial optimization problem. And in 2001, Lasserre, and also in 2000, Pario introduced a method based on semi-definite programming to solve these problems. And actually, when we apply our method on this formulation of the problem, we exactly recover the method introduced by Lasserre and Pario. So in some sense, our method is a generalization of this standard method to solve the scalar polynomial optimization problem to the non-commutative case. So a second observation is that the dual formulation of our SDP relaxation are linked to to a mathematical theory, which is the ESOS decomposition of positive polynomials. So when you have a polynomial that is positive, under some circumstance, you can write it as a sum of square. And there has been quite a lot of work which has been done by mathematicians to study the property of such positive polynomials. And the work that they, I mean, the result that they've obtained can be used to prove the convergence or some convergence properties on our relaxations. So you see the disconnect to some other work, yeah?
In your assumption, you optimize it more with some constraint set.
Yeah.
And in this constraint set, there is an interior point, or?
Okay, yes, we assume that there is at least one interior point. There is, yes. Okay, we assume that the problem is well defined, so there is some solution. Yes, you can. So if this condition is satisfied, that the condition here is such that the operators are bounded, then the dual will give you some certificate that you have hit the global optimum, actually, yes. Well, okay, what we use is standard SDP. So standard SDP, they solve both problems at the same time, yes. Okay, so now I think, so let's see how this applies to the problem of electronic energy. So I think it's quite straightforward. It's basically the same technique, but maybe it's worth doing it in detail. So so the ground state energy of an electron that can occupy r orbitals is actually the solution to the following non-commutative polynomial optimization problem, which is defined in terms of these operator variables. So where A1 to R are considered as the annihilation operators, and A1 dagger to AR dagger are the creation operators. Okay, so I have here my Hamiltonian. I impose the anti-commutation relations for fermions. So these are polynomial constraints. And then I also impose the constraint that my wave function is an electron wave function, right? So it's clear that any solution, I mean, there is only one representation of these anti-commutation relationships. So even though I do not fix the Hilbert space, there will be only one Hilbert space which will satisfy all this. And so if I can solve this problem exactly, I will find the ground state energy of my Hamiltonian, right? And so now we can apply our method to this problem. And so so let's look, for instance, at the relaxation of degree 2. So remember that I have to build this matrix M as an overlap matrix of a set of vectors which are defined this way, where x alpha is at most of degree 2. So in our case, M2 is just built on the following set of vectors, right? So I consider all product of annihilation creation operators up to degree 2, and I define these vectors. But actually, a general property in this optimization problem is that if the set of vectors, it's sufficient to consider a set of vector which is linearly independent under the constraints of my problem. So here, for instance, since I have this anti-commutation relation for fermions, I have this operator is linearly related to this one. So I can forget about these vectors. And I also have that the identity is related to these vectors through my condition here. So I can, for instance, also drop the identity vector. And so I end up with this set, right? So now the matrix M2 will have the following form. Okay, so this is just the labels of the columns, and these are the labels of the row. And inside, this is the matrix, which is defined as the overlap of these elements. So I have to impose that this matrix be positive, but remember I also have the linear constraints which come from my problem. So let me just skip the detail, but I can apply in a systematic way all the constraints. And these constraints, they will induce some linear relation on the entries of my matrix. And for instance, I will find that all non-diagonal elements will be equal to zero. Okay? So we expect this as all these non-diagonal elements do not conserve the number of particles. So all this is equal to zero, and we just end up with a diagonal matrix. Yes? No, no, it's exactly conserved, not in the mean value. Okay? And so normally you recognize these matrices. I mean, this is just the two-particle RDM. So there is a typo. We should forget about this. This A bigger. So this is the two-hole RDM. So these are all the matrices which are defined previously. Right? And so the constraint that this matrix be positive amounts to ask the positivity of each of these individual matrices. And so I've used a set of linear constraints to show that all these non-diagonal elements are equal to zero, but there remain some additional linear constraints on the matrices, and these are just usual linear relations that are known between my matrices here. So you see that in the end, I just exactly recover the usual condition which are considered in the RDM method. And so similarly, if I consider relaxation of higher degree, this will correspond to implementing higher order positivity and representability condition of the RDM method. So in a way, we re-derive by another approach, in a systematic way, all these positivity and representability conditions. Okay, so note here, of course, that contrary to my general problem, here I expect convergence after a finite number of steps, since when I consider the n degree relaxation, it's equivalent to dealing with the full n electron wave function. So the interest of this approach is that it can be used to solve other problems. So the original problem that we considered is the following one. So it is to find the quantum violation of Bell inequalities. So I will not enter into detail, but I mean just briefly define the problem. So what we have is a system, and we do measurements on two subsystems of this system, right? So I have a system psi, and then I do measurements on one subsystem x, and I can have a result a, and I do some measurement y on a second subsystem, and I can have a result b. And I'm interested in a function which is a linear combination of the probabilities to observe output a and b, given that I have made measurement x and y. And so these operators here, they have to be measurement operators, so they have to be orthonormal projectors, which sum to the identity. And because I consider two separated subsystems, I add the additional constraint that the measurement operator of the first subsystem may commute with the measurement operator of the second subsystem. So note here that, I mean, and so here I do not fix the dimension, okay? I'm interested in finding the most general system which minimize this linear combination of the probabilities. And contrarily to the electronic energy problem, here, first, the dimension is not bounded, and second, I mean, there is no unique representation. So even if I fix the dimension, there are many, many ways to find measurement operators which satisfy all these constraints. So it's not really not easy to deal with such problem, and actually our method, for the moment, is the only one which can be used to solve in full generality such problems. There is no other way to do it. And it works very well. So it has been applied to 241 Bell inequalities, and the optimal solution was obtained at the fourth relaxation step for 221 of them. And for the remaining 21, the gap between the lower bound as given by our method and the best known upper bound is very small, of the order of 10 minus 4. So so it's working very well. Other applications. So we have used this method to prove the security of some device independent cryptography protocol. So I'm not going to enter into detail, but this is some quantum information application. We have also applied the method to continuous variable system. For instance, if we consider a particle in a double well potential, so defined by this Hamiltonian, so this is just the usual harmonic oscillator, but I had x to the 4 correction to the Hamiltonian. And the constraints that I impose are just the usual position and momentum commutation relations. So note here that, again, the, a priori, the dimension of the Hilbert space is not bounded, right? But our methods allow to deal with this without introducing any truncation of the Hilbert space. So so here, this corresponds to the first relaxation step, second, third, fourth. And at the fourth, the curve that we obtain becomes indistinguishable with a curve that we obtain through a variational method. Okay. And so maybe there are also many other problems for which this method is useful. So to summarize, we've seen that techniques which are very similar were actually almost the same that the one that people have used in the RDM method allow to solve a much broader class of non-commutative polynomial optimization problems. I think the interest of our method for solving this general problem is that first, it is very flexible and it works on different problems, quantum chemistry, Bell inequalities, continuous variable system, etc. Contrarily to most optimization methods which give upper bounds, our method gives lower bounds. It's insensitive to the symmetry of the problem, so if the objective function, whether the objective function is symmetric or symmetric, doesn't modify the efficiency of the method, which is of course good for quantum chemistry, where the Hamiltonian typically do not have any obvious symmetry. Since the method is just based on algebraic properties that the operator satisfy, it can deal with infinite Hilbert space without having to truncate the Hilbert space. So I think all this is quite some nice properties. So of course, from the perspective purely of quantum chemistry, we do not provide a new method. We just recover the usual RDM method, but I think it's quite nice to see that it originates in a systematic way from a more general approach. And maybe by establishing this connection, some new insights can be gained. For instance, we have derived this stopping criteria, which guarantee that we have hit at a finite relaxation step the optimal solution. And I'm not aware of any similar results for the RDM method. So maybe here there is some room for improvement. So I'm going to stop here. Thank you. Yes. Okay, so I didn't hear actually.
So you mentioned that your method generalizes the
Noster. Yes, yes, yes.
Does it also generalize some other things like Shirali atoms
or? Well, I don't know this. Okay, I don't know them, so I would be happy to talk with you, but I don't know. Yes, you had a question?
Yeah, my question is, in what sense you really get lower bounds in an infinite dimensional problem? For example, for the standard kind of problems that occur in quantum chemistry, you expect the full solution is going to have require an infinite
For this kind of problem, for instance, here, we do not have any. The problem that we want to solve is really defined like that, okay, from the beginning. So here, we don't know anything. We really optimize over all Hilbert space dimension. So when we get a solution, it's really a lower bound on the solution that we seek. Of course, for quantum chemistry, I mean, the original problem that you want to solve actually is not this one. Okay, here I have already introduced a truncation of the Hilbert space.
You might mention your and observation. So, in my impression, the non-commutable, non-commutable,
yes.
Polynomial can be motivated in commutable stuff with some linear constant. Right?
So what we want to implement the commutativity. Yes. So you want to start with usual commutative polynomial optimization and then introduce non-commutativity. For so linear. Okay. Well, I don't know really. I'm not sure, but we can talk after. I'm sure I understand. No, it's the other way around. I mean, I think it's standard polynomial optimization. Is our method with the additional, what was it? Okay, wait. Okay, so standard polynomial optimization is our method with the additional commutativity constraints.
Right.
But it's not that we take standard polynomial optimization and we have some non-commutativity constraints. It's the other way around, okay? Yeah. And this is implemented through linear constraints. Yes, that's true, yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Of course, the problem when you solve the problem, then you can compute the eigenvalue of the matrices, and typically we see that they are all positive, but maybe they are 10 to minus 9. Okay. So I mean, with the okay, so no, we know nothing about the stability, actually. So I don't know. But when you find that most of the eigenvalues are very small, I mean it's kind of fair to assume that they're equal to zero. But okay, yeah, right. But what you can do actually? Yeah. Yeah, but what you can do actually is that independently of the rank condition, you can always implement this procedure. And if it works, then you know that you have a solution, right? So if you find that most of the eigenvalues are small and your rank is okay, you can try to reconstruct psi and x, and then you will find if it provides a solution or not. Okay.